From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz-Pena with a local and statewide news update. School starts today in Juneau. Classes will remain virtual for the time being. Students and teachers hope lessons learned last spring and during the break will carry over into the new school year. KTOO's Adeline Baxter has more.
This is not how Linnea Lentfer imagined her senior year of high school going.
It was a disappointment, but not a total surprise.
Lentfer grew up in Gustavus, but came to Juneau to attend Juneau Douglas High School Yada'a Katle. She says when students were first sent home as the pandemic spread in March, none of them would have guessed they'd still be attending virtual classes 5 months later.
There's people from that day who I'm quite literally never going to see again, like the people who I just say hi to in the hallways every day. And then it's just like, oh, we're out for a week. We're out for a month. We're not going back to school.
Now, with classes starting up again, Lentfer may be luckier than some of her peers. She has a lighter course load as a senior. Still, it's hard to imagine how her oceanography class will work virtually.
I haven't heard from the teacher specifically. I'm pretty sure that we will have some opportunity to come in to school in small groups for labs, but I'm not sure what that looks like.
The Juneau School District announced earlier this month that it will begin the school year online. Depending on the spread of COVID-19 in the community, the district may decide to allow small groups of students to attend in-person classes after Labor Day. But large numbers of students won't be allowed back until at least mid-October. Kelly Stewart is the president of the Juneau Education Association. She's also a special education teacher at Glacier Valley Elementary School.
In March, when we shut down, we were in full survival emergency mode, and I think our staff did a fantastic job at doing the best they could at something that was so unknown.
This time around, Stewart and many of her colleagues have spent the entire summer planning for the new school year. Staff members spent the last 2 weeks training with the programs they'll use to keep track of students.
It's still going to look different, and we're going to probably have to work a little harder to engage and get kids involved, but I think we're much better prepared now than we were in March.
Stewart said teachers will also be collaborating in groups to help support one another and to help students become familiar with more than one person.
So that when they do come back face-to-face at school, or we do move to the hybrid model, that they are going to already know 6 to 9 adults because they've been working with them.
Staff handed out textbooks and supplies to students and their families all of last week, and they'll continue to do that through the first week of classes. The district is providing Chromebooks to students that need them. Even with all the preparation, Stewart says there are bound to be some hiccups with technology. The rollout of one of the apps teachers will be using is already a little delayed. Ann Lentfer says she worries that getting to know her new classmates won't be easy. Earlier this year, when her classes moved online, she already knew everyone.
And so being on Zoom, there was already kind of a classroom culture, and just what that will look like when we start on Zoom from the beginning will be really interesting to see.
She's grateful that she still has the cross-country season to look forward to, even if they won't get to travel. They had their first meet on Saturday, competing remotely against other Southeast teams. She just hopes that her senior year won't have to end the way it did last year.
I mean, I really hope we get a little bit more of a graduation and kind of all of those end of high school pieces. That's definitely the hard unknown.
Classes for grades 1 through 12 begin Monday. Kindergarten starts Thursday and preschool next week. Breakfast and lunch will continue to be served for pickup at each school. Masks are mandatory for anyone on school grounds. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.
There was another glacial dam release that dumped a lot of water into Mendenhall Lake and Mendenhall River over the weekend. Starting Friday afternoon, water started flowing down from Suicide Basin, a glacially dammed lake located about 2 miles up from the face of Mendenhall Glacier. Rick Fritsch, a National Weather Service meteorologist at the Juneau office, says he went out to Skater's Cabin and the nearby campground to take a look on Saturday afternoon.
You know, the usual places where you see the water creeping in as you're driving out on Skater's Cabin Road. On the right-hand side, you can see it infiltrating in amongst the trees there and the shoreline. And then there's two areas where it's fairly clear. And I was thinking to myself, well, if I had my kayak, I could paddle right up to the edge of the road.
Mendenhall Lake crested at 8.3 feet Saturday evening. That's above bank full height. This is at least the third time that both the lake and river flooded this summer. Heavy rains drove up lake levels to 10.2 feet on August 10th. The first glacial dam release of the season, called a yokulap, forced the lake to crest at 11.5 feet on August 1st. That's moderate flood stage, but just short of the record of 12 feet. Tlingit master carver Tommy Joseph is prolific. He's created nearly 20 totem poles in Sitka alone, not to mention his work around Southeast and in other parts of the state and country. His latest project is a reproduction of the Wasco pole for the Sitka National Historical Park. KCAW's Aaron McKinstry headed to Joseph's workshop in the park to learn more about him and the project.
When I arrive, Tommy Joseph holds out a realistic wooden fist on a 6-foot pole. He gives me a socially distanced fist pump. Then he gets to work inside a roped-off shed, tucked behind Totem Hall at the Sitka National Historical Park. Joseph uses a curved tool called an elbow adze to smooth and peel away bits of wood from a yellow cedar log. He's still in the early stages of transforming the log into a 23-foot totem pole.
Like this whole, you see what I, in front of us here, the raw log, this is the work part. It's been a lot of work to get to here. But tomorrow I'll actually start drawing the lines in, and the work stops here tonight. It doesn't become work anymore. Now it's being creative and matching up and making the lines flow and connect and do what they're supposed to do.
Joseph is working on the park's second reproduction of the Wasco pole, which tells the story of a Haida legend. The park no longer has the original. Park records indicate that it came to Sitka around the turn of the century from Quinglas, a Kaigani Haida village on Long Island in southern southeast Alaska. Territorial Governor John Brady placed the pole and several others along the park's present-day totem trail. Carver George Benson then created a reproduction in the 30s that was moved inside Totem Hall after it fell and suffered damages in the 90s. Sitka National Historical Park's Jessica Perkins says they want to place Joseph's reproduction outside, where the original once stood.
This Wasco pole is one of the few that currently is not along the trail, and so therefore this is part of a larger effort to restore that historic cultural landscape.
Perkins says park staff have been reaching out to Haida communities to make sure the park's history of the pole is accurate. It's a new effort to make sure Haida culture is appropriately represented along Totem Trail.
And so I'm really excited to be able to share the whole story, to make sure we've got the whole story of the pole and that we're representing that completely.
And she says the park is excited to work with Joseph again. This isn't his first pole for the park. During a typical summer, they'd have artists working in the visitor center, but they're closed because of the pandemic. Joseph's outdoor studio allows the public to observe an experienced carver from a safe distance. And experienced, he is. Joseph started carving in 1972.
Third grade was my first opportunity to work with a knife on a piece of wood. And I liked it and kept doing it and have every opportunity to be around carvers. When I was a kid, I would hang out. I was one of the quietest kids around, but I just observe and watch a lot.
Yeah.
And then go do it. Go home and try to do it.
What do you love about it?
Well, taking a big raw piece of wood and turning it into something, that's pretty cool.
He's happy to be out of the house and working during the pandemic, which threw a wrench in some of his other projects. And this isn't the only way he's channeling his energy right now. He's also been carving politically satirical masks and working on a 20-foot dugout canoe. Joseph says it's a good balance of realism and satire. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
Environmental groups have wasted no time challenging the Trump administration's attempt to allow oil and gas drilling in an Alaska refuge where polar bears and caribou roam. Two lawsuits filed Monday sought to block the Interior Department's plan to allow oil and gas lease sales on the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The leader of the National Audubon Society says the decision last week to establish oil and gas lease sales was an all-hands-on-deck moment to defend the refuge. The Interior Department says the leasing program was mandated by Congress and leaves most of the refuge off-limits. This is KTOO News.